So, welcome to Landmark Chambers Planning Podcast with me, Stephen Whale, and my colleague, Matthew Dale Harris. And we're going to be talking, Matthew and I, about the Glover Report, national parks and AOMBs, and principally planning issues, of course, in relation to those. The Glover Report, technically entitled The Landscapes Review, was published in late 2019. The government responded to it in January 2022. There's a consultation exercise, which we'll say a little bit more about in due course. Matthew, any particular interest of yours in national parks, AOMBs, any particular work relating to these?
Thank you, Stephen. Good morning, everybody. Yes, well, I grew up in what is now part of the South Downs National Park. So I have a long-standing interest in our AOMBs and national parks. Now I'm a planning and environmental specialist at Landmark. So I practice across issues that relate to national parks and AOMBs. And recently I've been involved in a number of interesting environmental cases, including working for Friends of the Earth on the North Yorks Mineral Plan, where we sought and have now succeeded to carve out an exclusion zone for fracking to keep it out of the national parks and AOMBs up there. So my practice often involves AOMB and national park issues, as well as broader environmental issues such as the burning of vegetation above peat, for which I've been acting for the Moorlands Association recently.
Very good. Well, a similar story for me, I suppose. I wasn't born in a national park, although not too far away from one. Spent a lot of my childhood, though, in national parks, in the north in particular, particularly the Lake District, and I suppose, above all, the Yorkshire Dales. In terms of work, like you, I deal in planning and environmental matters. I've advised a number of national park authorities and continue to do so. And in the middle of 2020, the Secretary of State appointed me to the South Downs National Park Authority, so I'm one of its members. So I'm, I suppose, ultimately responsible with fellow members for looking after the national park as it now is that you grew up in. Okay, so we're going to talk about the Glover Report, as mentioned. Perhaps you could just help listeners with some of its principal features and recommendations, and we can have a think about those.
Indeed. Well, in the Glover Report, as you say, came out now a little while ago, back in 2019. As drafted, it's got five main areas. Areas focusing firstly on the value of the role that AOMBs and national parks play in supporting nature and beauty, then some chapters dealing with the social aspects of the impacts of national parks. But I think in terms of the key proposals that really impact on those working in the planning field, it's some of the latest proposals that are most relevant. So the final proposals deal with, I think it's proposal 24, addresses the question of the status of AOMBs in the planning system. Particularly notable, there was a proposal that AOMB partnerships and management bodies become statutory consultees on planning applications, as opposed to the current system where it's Natural England who step in on that role. Also, there were proposals in relation to producing local plans and potential changes to the MPPF.
And wasn't there also a proposal to rename AOMBs?
Well, yes, there's a national landscapes, I think, is the term that's been put out there.
I don't know if you... seems a bit of a labelling point to me. I don't know what your thoughts are.
I can understand that acronyms are seldom very good for focusing public minds on public impressions of what these things are for, and you know, the area of outstanding natural beauty perhaps gets lost in the acronym. So I can see that there might be some merit in seeking a broader, more intuitive term, perhaps. But yeah, it does feel a bit like window dressing.
Yes, a little bit, perhaps. I suppose if they do become national landscapes, and then we've got national parks, I wonder if people will appreciate the difference between the two. Anyway, we shall see what becomes of that proposal. But just in terms of the planning system, just picking up a point you made, yes, this idea that AOMBs might become statutory consultees is an interesting one. I think I'm right in saying that Glover recommended against AOMBs actually deciding planning applications in their areas. I think that's the position, isn't it?
That's right. I mean, clearly that would have been a very significant change, and it's hard to see at that point what, in planning terms, what the difference between AOMBs and national parks would be in many ways.
Yes, because national park authorities are local planning authorities, and they do decide planning applications, although certainly in the South Downs they have delegated arrangements with some of the district councils. Yeah. I suppose I should say I'm not speaking today as a member of the South Downs National Park Authority, but you know, that's a matter of record that they have that delegated arrangement. Although some applications, many applications, the park authority does decide for itself without delegating. Glover recommended against AOMBs deciding planning applications for themselves. This idea of AOMBs having local plans for their areas, just wondering how that might in practice happen. Would that have to be in conjunction with the LPAs or something of that kind?
Well, I think that was certainly the suggestion in the Glover review. I suppose it was almost a necessary step given the resourcing position for AOMB bodies, that they would need to work with a fuller resource body such as the local planning authorities, and in the absence of a change to make the AOMB bodies the planning authority, as in the national park context, it was necessary that they would have to do that. They would have to bring forward local plans in consultation.
Yes.
Co-working.
I saw that Glover have been focusing on two areas in particular, the Chilterns and the Cotswolds. I read that the Glover report recommended that those two areas have a single local plan each. I mean, of course, the Chilterns and the Cotswolds aspire to be national parks, or at least many people in those areas would like them to become national parks, although I noted that wasn't actually one of the recommendations. Anyway, if they each have a single local plan for their area, that has obvious implications for the role of the current councils in those areas, I suppose.
Indeed, and I mean, particularly when one thinks about the area of the world where the Chilterns and the Cotswolds sit, and you've got a big area in between that has now merged into the Buckinghamshire single authority. It perhaps, although Glover didn't go there, it's perhaps indicative of a view that probably there needs to be closer working between those authorities, and perhaps something along the lines of what's happened in Buckinghamshire would be appropriate for the Chilterns and the Cotswolds.
Mm-hmm. I suppose another rationale for making AOMB teams statutory consultees is that it would encourage developers to engage with them even before the planning application goes in.
Yes, I mean, I think it's probably fair to recognise that the big advantage of having AOMB consultees on design issues and landscape impact issues would be that you would have a pool of knowledge about the sensitivities of the AOMB, which in fairness has to be addressed through the planning system even as things stand. You know, when you apply for development either within an AOMB,
types of initiative for development, either within an Airbnb or in its setting, one of the key issues that any developer will face is how to deal with the principles and policies set out in the Airbnb management plan. So you can see that there's a logic to bringing the Airbnb body itself in as a consultee to enable better understanding and consultation pre-application on that, to enable design to respond more effectively to it.
Yes, indeed. Okay, well, those were some of the recommendations in the Glover report, insofar as they bear on planning issues. As we say, that was autumn 2019. And then in January of this year, 2022, the government published its response. I don't think we need to dwell on the whys and wherefores of the delay in between. And the government's response obviously gives you a firm indication of the government's thinking. It welcomed the report. It said it was grateful for the report. Perhaps we can just have a think about some of the highlights, if you like, of the government's response. I mean, the first one I would mention was the recognition of what National Parks and OMBs experienced during lockdown, as it's called. I mean, one of the features of those landscapes during lockdown was the simply vast increase in the numbers of people accessing them. Mm. People, for obvious reasons, were at home or working from home, that they were therefore millions of people in these protected landscapes or close to them, and vast numbers of people spent more time in these landscapes during lockdown. That obviously had certain advantages in terms of well-being and health, mental health, but the obvious downsides, well reported, in terms of the impact of those vast numbers of people on farming, livestock, and so on and so forth. Anyway, that's all mentioned in the government's response. Yeah. Were there any others that you picked out?
Well, I mean, an aspect of the response which struck me, and I think connects back to the points you've just made about the context of lockdown and the way in which national parks and AOMBs had to react to the greater number of visitors, is the biodiversity ecology framing of much of the government's response. There's significant emphasis on the commitment to protect 30% of the UK's land by 2030, the 30 by 30 pledge. And there's also extensive references to the 25-year environment plan, the need for local nature recovery strategies, and also the peat action plan, which has quite telling significance for particularly for the AOMB, the national parks in the north and north of England. So I thought that was very striking, because of course it gets to the heart of one of the challenges that's faced in national policy around protected landscapes, which is the complexities of the interaction between people and nature.
Yes. Interesting you refer to protected landscapes, because that's the term that the government uses for national parks and AOMBs, and I might add the Broads. But again, I suppose we've got this issue of labelling and terminology, because there are other protected landscapes, SACs, SPAs, SSSIs. I suppose it goes back to your point about acronyms. So what one does have to appreciate that when the government's talking about protected landscapes in this response, it's focusing on national parks, the Broads, the AOMBs.
Yeah.
Of course, SACs, SPAs, SSSIs might be found and often are found within these landscapes. But again, just we need to be mindful of what the government means by protected landscapes. I mean, other features of the response that I noted were, I mean, at a practical level, there's a proposal for two brand new AOMBs, the Yorkshire Wolds and the Cheshire Sandstone Ridge. plus a proposal to extend the Surrey Hills and the Chilterns AOMBs. Okay. So again, if that comes to pass, further implications there for planning, especially if AOMB teams are statutory consultees. But there are also other features I picked out. I mean, I saw that there's a trailing of another review in the pipeline of the NPPF. I'm not sure what version we're now on. I don't know if you can remember.
Three or four,
I think. With perhaps, another one due. Obviously, what one of the recommendations that Glover made about strengthening the protection of land in the setting of national parks and AOMBs has already been put into effect through the new paragraph 176 of the NPPF.
Yes.
And I suppose we ought to say that, you know, in parallel with the government's response, there's also the Environment Act, which got royal assent last year. Anything about that you particularly think is worth mentioning?
Well, the embedding of biodiversity net gain in the planning system, I mean, there's obviously been a lot of discussion about it, but I think it's perhaps still not been appreciated, perhaps as widely as it needs to be, just how fundamental that precondition to the achieving of planning permission for development is going to be. The requirement to secure 10% gains is going to have very wide implications. I mean, it's not upon us quite yet, but all developers looking down the road are going to have to be thinking quite carefully. Everyone involved in preparing sites are going to think quite carefully about how that threshold is going to be met.
Yes,
that's in question.
Absolutely, I would agree with that. That particular provision is not yet in force because there's further discussion ongoing about the precise mechanics of it. There's a metric for measuring biodiversity on site at present and then net gain. There's discussion about net gain on site and off site. So there's a certain, I'll call it transition period, if you like, or lead-in before that condition comes into force. But I would agree with you, it's still not, I don't think, as widely appreciated as it ought to be, that you just won't get planning permission if you don't deliver at least 10% biodiversity net gain. And that provision is sort of entirely consistent with the direction of travel in the government's response to Glover. I mean, a couple of other points, I suppose, that I picked out was there's the government are going to monitor permitted development rights in protected landscapes, and there's a possibility that they will be cut back in due course.
Indeed, although I think it's probably, I noticed the language around that also recognises the benefits which permitted development has for communities working within it. So I felt like it was a lukewarm endorsement of the principle of permitted development and review. I don't know if that's reading between the lines too much, but
I think that's a fair description, particularly when you see some of the other proposals or other aspects of the response which are much more clear-cut and obvious in terms of where things are going. I mean, I noticed the government is going to test the proposal to rename AONBs as national landscapes, which perhaps suggests the government has the same sort of thoughts about the relabeling as we have discussed. And there's also the fact the government hasn't ruled out expanding open access rights, which may not be strictly a planning point, but will obviously be of interest, perhaps even concern to landowners.
Indeed. I mean, I think it was interesting to see the reference to open access rights, and there's also, perhaps raising similar issues, the comments on green lanes and access that's been made of the use that's been made of those by 4x4s and discussions to whether or not there needs to be potentially legislation to exclude classes of vehicles from those lanes. So you can see the government responding to, I think, what are quite high, have been quite high profile campaigns and cases around those sorts of issues.
Yes, exactly. I mean, the use of quote unquote green lanes, boats, byways open to all traffic, and similar kinds of highways is a big issue in many local areas, and I've no doubt people will have written to their MPs in large numbers about it. I mean, at the moment, actually, national park authorities can make traffic regulation orders on certain highways, including boats. Obviously, traffic authorities can. But it seems that the government has got the bit between the teeth on this issue. And maybe, as you say, bringing in new legislation to make sweeping exclusions of vehicles on certain kinds of highways, subject no doubt to certain exceptions, but
sure,
we'll just have to wait and see how that unfolds. I mean, back to, I suppose, a purely planning issue. I did note in the government's response there was further support for rural exception sites for affordable housing. So this, I suppose, you know, goes the other way in terms of housing within national parks and AOMBs. That there's a recognition there that some kind of affordable housing, frankly, is needed.
Indeed, although I thought it was striking that in its response, the government makes it very clear that its comments on rural exception sites apply generally to the countryside at large, and doesn't act, they slightly duck, if I may say, the specific question of how housing is to be accommodated in the protected landscapes themselves by making this broader point.
Yes. I suppose we ought to now focus on where things are going next. We've discussed the Glover report, we've discussed the government's response. I mean, DEFRA has launched a consultation exercise. It's currently open, and it ends on the 9th of April, with 24 questions posed, plus the opportunity to provide further comments. And the rationale for the consultation exercise is really that changes to primary legislation might be needed in some areas, including, of course, in terms of planning.
Yeah.
So we've got a number of questions on the role of AOMB teams in planning. We've got a whole series of questions on visitor pressures and traffic regulation orders, the kind of points you alluded to and I mentioned a moment ago. And then we've got, I think, a question on general power of competence, haven't we?
We do, yes. Looking at whether or not national park authorities should have general competences like other local authorities, effectively.
Yes, yeah. It's interesting that the government has even posed the question about that. But, of course, we don't know what people are going to say in response, but even the fact the question is posed does rather suggest the government is amenable to giving national park authorities that general power of competence. Whatever the consultation responses say, I suppose, you know, looking beyond that, we can, you know, make a fair bet as to certain things that are going to happen or certain things that are going to stay. I mean, are you prepared to sort of say where you think things are going to end up or what you think might stay or what might change?
Well, I think, you know, the national parks and AOMB land, that is going to remain a key part of the structure of land use in England. We're going to, I think, see... The tendency seems to be towards the inclusion of more land. There's no suggestion anywhere that land will be removed. And the 30 by 30 commitment suggests that the government, it will continue to look for additional land in the short term, and obviously we have specific proposals for new AOMBs in Cheshire and Yorkshire.
Yes, I would agree with that. There's no suggestion at all that national parks and AOMBs, or whatever they may be called in future, are going to disappear. As you say, they're, if anything, only going to get larger in area and greater in number.
Mm.
I mean, I've mentioned just as a tangent that that Greenbelt seems to be here to stay. Anyway, at least there's nothing from the current government to suggest Greenbelt's going to disappear or its protection's going to be watered down.
No.
There might even be more protection for national parks and AOMBs in the next version of the NPPF, which it seems to be in the offing.
Yeah.
And then perhaps there's that 10% point that you mentioned.
Well, exactly, yes. I mean, I think, you know, the requirement for biodiversity net gain will have major ramifications. And I think we should also be aware, you know, look towards the increased role of AOMB authorities, the planning system, or AOMB partnerships and management bodies, and potentially also an expanded role, an even further expanded role for national park authorities, as per that consultation question. So
yes, exactly. I mean, that minimum 10%, I mean, I don't think we can really emphasise enough, can we, as an important provision, not just on the horizon, but imminent.
Yeah.
And with the national parks and AOMBs here to stay, the green belt here to stay, more role for AOMB teams in the planning system, it seems that, you know, the idea of building houses in large numbers in those protected landscapes is just going to become, if anything, more difficult, and developers will just continue to focus on land outside those protected landscapes, I suppose.
I think that's that seems like a fair conclusion, if I might say so.
Thank you. Good. Thank you so much, Matthew.
Thank you very much, Stephen.